following was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated in Memphis, Tennessee.
Hello, my name is Rick Cheddar, and this is From Radioland.
Greetings, salutations, hello, hey, how's it going? Welcome to another episode from Radioland from the home office in Memphis, Tennessee, Studio A, episode 292 here underway. It's a Saturday when this is being recorded. It is Saturday the 14th of September. The reason I usually do this on Sunday the day it comes out, but I'm doing it a little bit differently this time out because, well, today there was a lot going on, and it just seemed surprisingly, it was easier for me to do the show on Saturday than it would be to screw around and try and get it done tomorrow, because Sunday I have a very busy day. I won't really be in the studio per se because, well, first of all, we got the Booze and Blues show, which is a Sunday night thing at Radio Memphis. Radio-Memphis.com is where you can find that show, 8 p.m. Central. Got Donna and Wade happening in the studio tomorrow night. Going to play the Blues. They're already talking about bringing a keg and a bunch of people. That'll be interesting. That it will. Saturday, yeah, it was big around here because we had the Cooper Young Fest here in Memphis. Those of you who know me know that I reside in an area in Memphis called Cooper Young. It's an entertainment district. It's the Cooper Young Entertainment District. And today was the Cooper Young Fest. In the past, it averages about 165 to 170,000 people that show up for this thing. It's a big deal. It's a large gathering of humanity for a free festival. There's like four stages of music. There's arts and crafts and all that stuff. And they do this load in at like 5 a.m. and it wraps at 7. And then by about 10 o'clock tonight, which is what, in about an hour and a half, 2 hours from now, it'll be done. It was as if it didn't even happen, which is kind of cool. I'm thrilled about that. So as a resident, yeah, that's kind of cool. And a little while ago, before I began to sit down and tape this, I stepped outside for a moment to kind of assess the damages out there in the neighborhood. And immediately when I opened up the front door, I saw these blue lights flashing. And, of course, I got nervous. And there was nothing to be nervous about, my friends. There was some man who was seated on the curb a couple of doors down from me. His hands obviously behind his back. He's being handcuffed. And there were probably four police cars in there. So I'm thinking somebody got a little drunk and disorderly, probably tried to fight somebody. Who knows? And one of the police officers was walking by. I said, "Everything cool?" And he goes, "Ah, no problem at all. It's all fine now." So there you have it. He's done and he's out the door. His weekend has been ruined because of his ill thought out plans or behavior. As it is, you know, when you go out to these sorts of things, you gotta plan your night. You gotta be thinking it through. You got to pay attention as to what is going on around you. And this guy clearly didn't even care. And lo and behold, he got out there and started causing some trouble. Such as it is. Let that be a lesson to you, kids. Just, you know, go out to the festivals, have fun, do what it is that you got to do, but don't do anything dumb. You get yourself into a lot of trouble that way. Right. That's not what we're going to get into today. We got a couple of things I want to get to. We'll have the unpopular thought coming up a little bit later on in this show. And it deals with a band who, I know, Rick, you're going to talk bad. I'm going to talk bad about a band. How dare you? You can't talk bad about bands. This one, I have the right to. I'll tell you about it. The cut's coming up a little bit later on. But right up out of the break spot, talking about music in a way, we're going to talk about the disc. Yep, the CD, the compact disc. It is dead. It is dying. It's gone. It's pointless, I think. We'll get to that and more. Stick around. You're listening to it right here from Radioland.
Get on the Memphis Brew Bus. Every Saturday at 2 p.m., we'll take a 3.5-hour adventure through the Memphis craft brewery scene. The Memphis Brew Bus stops at three local breweries for some special behind-the-scenes tours, talks with the master brewers, and, of course, tasting of their signature brews. While on the bus, you'll hear stories and learn about the history of beer. Plus, you'll get some music from the Radio Memphis Library. Go to MemphisBrewBus.com and find them on Facebook. The Memphis Brew Bus will drive you to drink.
I have been in the broadcast business for nearly 35 years. It's a long time. I have done a grand number of things. I've been involved in a lot of productions. I've been involved in a lot of live performances. Done a lot of shows, countless shows. Sitting behind a mic in a dark room someplace in some bowels of some dark, dank city somewhere, playing music, listening to people talk on the telephone, trying to entertain people. And the methods by which that has happened have certainly changed over the years. When I first started, there was this thing called the LP, the long playing record, the 33 and a third, or as my wife says, the immigrant, she calls it the 33 and a third. At one point, too, there were, of course, 45s. Still, I did mess around with a little bit of those. And then after the LP, because, you know, you had turntable maintenance. One thing about turntables, which are fantastic, by the way, if you've got a good turntable. But these were cabinet turntables. They sat on the floor. They came up to just below your waist. So when you're seated in the chair, they were right there in front of you. You had two of them, one on the left, one on the right, next to each other. But they used what I'm thinking of in the studio that I worked in. It was on my left side. The board being in front of me to the right was other equipment. They're on my left. The outside, the outboard, if you would, it's turntable one. The one next to it was turntable two. And they were workhorses. They had a strong electric motor in them. They were quiet. They weren't all that attractive. They had a heavy stylus on them. Sometimes weighted a little bit to help prevent any, you know, if you bumped into the cabinet of the turntable, it wouldn't necessarily skip. The actual platter itself was where the stylus and where you put the record was on a sort of a floating spring-like apparatus that helped a little bit, if you were lucky. They were felt lined with a piece of felt that just kind of laid loosely onto the platter that gave guys like me the ability to do what was called a slip cue. I'm not going to get into all the nuances of that. You can look all that up later. The turntable was the mainstay of any radio station for many years. One little piece of trivia about it, there were a lot of radio stations to increase the amount of music that they would play in an hour would often speed their turntables up by about anywhere from 6 to 8%. That's why the lead singer of the Atlanta Rhythm Section often sounded like Stevie Nicks. True story. That was so they could get an extra song in over the course of an hour. In those days, the short jocking stuff, which is the DJ sitting there and he's playing the tune, he comes back out of the tune, he says a couple of words, he goes right into the next song. Plays a quick little sweeper, perhaps, what they call sweeper or an image piece, and it's somebody going, Radio Memphis, or whatever station it was. Nowadays, things have changed a little bit because people's listening tastes have changed somewhat. Well, there was a time when an album would come in from a promoter of some sort pushing a new act. You wanted to run it, you would put it on the air, and away you would go. And over the course of time, that record being played over and over and over, it would begin to wear out. And it would sound worse and worse and worse. Because we had, like I mentioned earlier, we had heavy stylus or styli. And they would just plow through the grooves of the record. And over time, it would just get more and more degraded. You could pull a record off of the shelf out of the library and look at it. And you could see out of, say, the five or six tracks that are on, say, side one, which one was the one that kept getting all the airplay just by visually looking at it. And you could just see how it was just torn up. And over time, they would send you new copies and stuff. And then stations got kind of wise to this. And figured out a way that they could do something a little bit differently. And they would take them, they'd take the new record and they'd send it over to the production department. And they'd have the production monkey sit down with his turntable in another studio that was not on the air. And he would dub the song onto tape. But it wasn't just any type of tape. It wasn't a cassette or anything. It was a thing that looked like an 8-track, but was not. It was called a cart. It was a singular looping piece of tape. It came in various lengths, usually about 5 to 6 to 8, maybe 8 minutes. There was 10-minute carts. There were longer ones, of course. And this guy's job was to play that song and dub it onto a tape, and then he would label it, and he would put the cue tones on it, which is a tone, but the human ear doesn't hear it, but it's a thing that triggers the next element. And they would bring those tapes in, and then you'd have what was called a carousel, which this thing would go in. If it was a live carousel, it was sort of automated, or it was one that you would just grab them and throw them into the machines, which looked like 8-track players, but we're not. and it would play the tune, it thus preserving the record. And the tape actually did pretty well. I mean, it was a quarter inch tape. And it would hold up remarkably well. And if something happened to it, you lost the tape, you whipped out the record out of the library, and you made another one. You made another tape, and that was what you did. So almost out of the chute, the LP record was starting to see that it had its place, but not necessarily in the starring role. You know what I mean? Well, that lasted a fairly long time, and shortly along the way came, and specifically in the 1980s, early 1981, came the compact disc, the CD, and there it stood in all of its glory. I remember as a young guy, I went into they used to have these audiophile stores, you know, a place where they sold the high-end speakers, the component stereo systems, you know, those, a lot of people would have those. I had something similar to that and had a big-ass amplifier. And it would have a radio that was built into it, but it had switches and you would plug different components into it, like a tape deck or a phonograph, you know, an LP record player. Or you could plug, if you were really fancy, you could plug in like your television into the thing and have all sorts of cool stuff going on, or a reel to reel if you were that sexy type of cat, you know. And everything was outputted to like these gigantic speakers. They were in walnut cases, and the big cone on it was, you know, easily a, you know, 14 and 18 inch cone, you know, and that was the woofer. And then you had the middle stuff, and then you had the little tweeter, and it was, oh, they were all adjustable. And it was an audiophile's dream in those days because of the warm sounds that came from these things. All analog, of course. All of it were. And when the CD came out and created this crystal clear digital sound, a bit of trivia for you, the first mainstream artist to release an album on compact disc was whom? Bruce Springsteen, born in the USA. It was recorded on tape, but it was later created. It was analog to digital is how that worked. And, you know, people saw this as, okay, this is going to be kind of cool. And finally, ancient technology, which the LP record really was, it had been around for a long, long time. Edison was the one that did the whole thing with the cylinders. You know, it wasn't too long after that when they flattened it all out and they could do some stuff with this technology of a groove and a needle bouncing back and forth in that groove, thus creating the sound. So anyway, I'm in the store, and there's this slick salesman type, you know, and he's like, hey, youngster, ever heard of a compact disc? And he pulls this thing out, you know, and we've all seen them, and there's this bright, shiny, silvery-looking thing. And he says, these things will maintain data for hundreds of years, which I'm sure it's true. And he's just kind of very casually flinging this thing around in the air, you know, between his thumb and his forefinger. And he drops the thing onto the floor and he steps on it and he goes, oops. He picks it back up and he puts it into the CD player. There's some classical music, of course, is coming out. And he's trying to push this whole concept, this whole device, this whole brand new thing onto me. And it was like, I don't know, at the time, I want to say it was probably like a $500 deal, just the CD player. I think now you can go buy a brand new one if they even sell them for like $5. It's like a Blu-ray player. They give them away. You know, it's incredible to me. But nevertheless, you know, he did conjure up the old thing about, oh, you remember the laser disc or the old video disc? You know, remember that? This is like that, but only for music, and it's this special and this small. And soon they'll be in cars everywhere. And the guy knew what he was talking about, clearly. He was some shill for Sony. But meanwhile, back at the radio stations, the CD player had come into a thing. Now, if you recall, the drawer would open, you drop your disc in there, and then you close the drawer, then you cue it up to whatever tune you wanted. And in a radio station, it was much, much faster. They had a cartridge-type setup. The disc sat in this little plastic deal that was about as big as the jewel case that you know, when you buy a disc that it comes in. It's about like that size. And on the bottom of it, it had a little spring-loaded door that opened up that exposed the data, if you will, to the lasers that are inside the player. And on the player was a knob and a LED readout and the digital readout. And the knob, you would twist it in whatever direction or the other. And it would, you could go like whatever track you wanted. Say there was track 7 you want to play. You'd turn it until it said 7. And then within a second, it would cue up and hold. And then there was a switch that would say you either play the song after that or it stops after that song. So that's kind of what you did. And when it was done playing its song and you went into the next tune, you'd take your index finger and then you would lift up on the little deal that held the CD and it would pop out into your hand and then you would stack it and grab another one and put it in there and rinse and repeat. And that was jocking. That was CD jocking. Did that for several years over there at the other place I worked at. And at that time, you know, we were sitting there thinking, well, this is good. This is groovy. This is interesting. This is another way. It's more music. It sounds fine. People are digging it. And we knew that computers were all a part of the scene, too, because it was only going to be a matter of time before a computer could really do what everything that we were doing. And I remember the boss came to me and said, hey, we're flying you to this place in Denver to learn an automation system. We want you to come back and teach us how this works. So they did. They put me on a plane. I went to Denver. I spent, I don't know, several days, maybe a week learning the system. And when I got back into town, I was taken over to I was picked up at the airport. Taken over to a local bar where I ran into some of the guys that I was working with at the time because they knew I was coming back into town and they were all sitting there looking at me like I had just come from the mountaintop with the tablets, you know, like Moses. And I said, well, what's up? And I said, fellas, it's all over from here. It's done. This was in 98, 99, somewhere in there. Maybe 2000. And here we were looking at computers that were not only handling all of the automation, but were handling the playback. And it was like you didn't even have to dub the music in. You could get the musical format, the MP3 or the WAV file, whatever it is that you want to go with, and it would put it in there, it would categorize it, would take care of it for you. And this blew a lot of guys' minds. It really did, because it was like, well, what's the point? Why are we needed? And that was a valid question because we sat around and said to ourselves, we remembered the 45 and the LP. What a fantastic memory we had of that. What a fantastic medium of music. And then there was the tape, which was kind of this, we knew it was kind of a stopgap thing because CDs were right around the corner. And then the CD came out and then we had all of these. I mean, that didn't last long. I think we're talking about 15 years of the compact disc on radio for the most part. And then it's gone. It's done on the course of radio production. And here's the humble MP3 file. Or as they did it at Clear Channel, the MP2, which, by the way, the MP stands for motion picture. Yes, I know that seems kind of weird. But it's in regards to the Motion Picture Association of America, the MPAA. They have very different codecs for dealing with sound and for digital video. And it was developed by certain engineers. So the MP was the motion picture version 2 or version 3. It currently is the version 3. And I think they've stopped supporting it. And there's not going to be an MP4. Everything's moving over to AUG. I think it's AUG and then FLAC and AUG Vorbis. And there's all sorts of weird stuff. But nevertheless, I digress. They did it in MP2 because they were afraid disc jockeys were going to be stealing the music and selling it later. They were worried about a Napster effect, which, be that as it may, they didn't think about the fact that you could just dub it and save it. Never mind. So anyway, they did it for the sake of space, too, because an MP3 is a compressed audio file. It doesn't take as much real estate to save it and such. And there it was. The 45, the LP, vinyl, gone. Acetate, it's always been there, but it was finally done. CD, silicone, done. It's fought a good, valiant fight, but it's done. I cannot tell you the last time I bought a CD. I don't. My wife used to give me box sets at the holidays of videos, like DVDs, the James Bond collection or the Sopranos and stuff like that. And that's even pointless because I can get all that stuff online. It's antiquated technology. It was antiquated right at the time it was purchased and put out. And yet, I see in 2019, almost 2020, that musicians today still release CDs. Why do they do this? Well, how else are they going to do it? I can't blame them for that. Because at the radio station, we get a CD that comes into us. The first thing we do to is we rip it into the system. we have some software that takes it, loads it into the system. We tag it. We get it ready. We send it over to the library. Boom, it's on the air. It's just that simple. And what does it do for us? It makes things easy. It's data manipulation. You think of a song, I can get it on the air in seconds. I hit the library, hit search, boom, there it is. Instead of having to go down the hall, thumb through the records, the last guy has probably misplaced it for whatever, we did, put it in the wrong, whatever. But as a delivery method, the compact disc is still a thing. It's tangible. That's part of the thing that musicians need to have is something tangible. Sure, you could just record your stuff and post it up onto your website or over to iTunes, if that's even a thing much longer, or wherever it is that you want to go. Have your people download your stuff, whatever. But there's nothing tangible to it. There's no photographs. There's no liner notes. There's no credits. There's no lyrics. There's none of that stuff. I've got one in my hand right now, actually. Alice Hazen's new one, Vile Intro. She gave it to me when she was on the air a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, there's something to be said for the tangibility of it, which is why LP records are making a comeback, why vinyl is making its return. For the first time in many, many years, since the 80s, I would say, vinyl is now on pace to outsell the compact disc. What you're not taking into consideration is the fact that nobody's adding into the equation. It's just between those two, between the CD and the LP. Of course, vinyl's going to outsell the CD because nobody's buying CDs. Everybody's buying downloads. Everybody's streaming stuff, right? Of course, it's going to outsell the CD. The LP record is on pace to do that. Production costs are starting to come down a little bit when it comes to making a vinyl record. It's still pretty pricey. But let me tell you something. Here in Memphis, there is a record company that produces LP records. They make vinyl. They're making discs over there. They're doing the outside cover pieces and the artwork that goes into customizing. They're doing this. Is it because of the convenience factor? No. Is it a nostalgia thing? Maybe. Is there superior audio quality to the CD? Abso-fucking-lutely there is. It is not nearly as convenient as digital, but what's nice about the analog sound, especially if you're recording an analog, which would be on tape, and tape is expensive, but if you're able to do that, then you're catching this warmth and there's a life there that you don't necessarily get digitally. Digitally, you get ones and zeros, and every little wart shows right up, and it's loud, and it's amplified, and it can be tricky to deal with. And I don't want to get into all those nuances. I could do a whole show about that. But there is something to be said for those who are serious about the way their music sounds, that they will buy their stuff on vinyl. The real serious cats will go back and hunt down those old component systems that I talked about earlier, the big fat amplifiers from Pioneer or Techniques, the ones made in Japan, not the ones in China, the Japanese-made ones. They were the superior ones. They were expensive. Oh, man, remember the Takamine tape deck? Remember that? That Takamine makes guitars, but they used to make tape decks. And they had one, I think it was called, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was called the Dragon. And so when you put a cassette in it and you would push play and it would go to the end, and in some of them they would just reverse the motor and then swap the heads and it would play the other side for you. You could go back and forth all night long. But this thing, oh no, when it got to the end of the tape, it would stop. The door would open and there was a little, it was like a little mechanical thing that spun the tape and then put it back in and sucked it back in and played it. It was the coolest thing. It was a novelty. It was dumb, but it was like $1,000 tape deck. On a side note, speaking of tape decks, I bought one a few years ago, a dual headed cassette tape deck. What did you need that for? I needed it because I had a client that came to me with an old tape they wanted digitized, and I took care of their needs for that. Do you know how difficult it was for me to find one locally? It was virtually impossible. I wound up going to a flea market where a guy had a Pioneer, a fairly old one, but it was nice, black face. It had the orange glow lights in it. Very nice. Needed a cleaning. Man, I hooked it up, threw a tape in there, and wow, there it was. Sounded like a cassette. That's just what it was. But yeah, that stuff is starting to come back, and it's not necessarily because of nostalgia. It is because of the superior sound that is there. We're dialing ourselves back. Could this be indicative of something that is happening to us down the way? How much further are we going to push ourselves, technologically speaking, until we realize, pardon, that it's time to dial it back. Time to go back to something that's a little more what we were used to. Of course vinyl is going to outsell the CD because nobody's buying CDs. Billboard magazine. You know this. You've heard of this. Billboard magazine rates music. They chart. When you make the charts, you're making the Billboard magazine. Number two with a bullet, babe. Climbing the charts. You know how that's measured, don't you? It's measured in sales, not radio station spins. Radio stations in the past would report to Billboard magazine with their playlists. Very few stations are doing that now because this is what they do or don't do. They have their reasons. And it seemed sort of silly because, you know, you had a bunch of radio stations that were playing whatever the hell they wanted. You know, they could jack up some guy's song by playing the hell out of it, or vice versa. You could have a program director that just didn't like that particular artist and just never played it. And that could skew the things. What seemed to matter? Sales. SoundScan. That's where it was. That's the company that measures it. The barcode that's on the back of a disc or an album, it's tracked. Where it was sold, you know, what city it was sold, what company sold it, how many copies went out. It's easily trackable. The number two song on this week's Billboard Top 40 might be blah, 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 whoever, but that's based in sales. Now, how's it in this day of digital when that happens without the sale of physical copy? Simple. How many downloads did it get? How many streams did it get? Because that's getting tracked. You go to your Spotify and you set up the algorithm that you want to hear your, I don't know, your Cardi B station. And it's going to give you songs Pandora does the same thing. And it tracks that stuff. It tracks how many times those songs just get spun out. That's all that is. But that's sales. It translates directly. You spend that 99 cents at iTunes for a song, that's sales. And that's where that goes. Percentage going back to the artist and the record company. And that's, you know, that's a whole sad story. So that's what's up. It's not a great system, but it's better than, you know, tracking it through the radio stations because, you know, radio stations have gotten to the point where, hey, just don't give a shit about that kind of stuff. Radio Memphis is one of them. I can proudly say we don't really give a shit about that. It's not like we don't give a shit about the artist. Of course we do, because we're playing songs that nobody else is going to play. Why is that? Because we never accepted payola. Never will, and we never will. We never have. This is the whole point of the thing. It's a discovery spot because somebody, and I've heard this from people, they go, man, it's expensive listening to you guys. And I said, why is that? And he goes, because I make note, and then I'm off the iTunes to download it. I'm off to Spotify to go get the song. Hey, good for you. The artist is getting paid that way. That's how that works. It's the way it's supposed to work. because it's what it boils down to. It's everything in this world is about sales, no matter what it is, whether it's cars, whether it's movies, songs, albums, pieces of art, books, colors of paint, iPhones. Yeah, who's lining up for the iPhone 11? That thing looks like a damn spider on the back with all the eyes on it. It looks kind of freaky. But yeah, we can thank the humble little compact disc for getting us to this place we are right now. Because if it wasn't for that, that's the one that cracked the door open for digital. Because if we can encode those little ones and zeros on a piece of foil that's on a CD that could be read back by a couple of lasers in a little box, then what else can we do with it? Also, for those of you that aren't necessarily aware, and this is a little piece of trivia about the compact disc, you know the label side? That whatever that is, it's on the label. That's especially like if you go to the store to buy the blank ones, they still have the part that you write on. If you were to scratch that, take a pocket knife and just scratch a line across there, you'd screw up the CD. It'd never play again because that's the foil that the images are burned into. Ha! Bet you didn't know that, did you? Hey, if you did, hey, good for you. So there you go. It's death to the disc, my friends. Will it be death to digital? Will that come? Maybe. I don't know. I don't know what else is around the corner. Maybe optical. Maybe that's what it'll be. We'll be getting all of our music in an optical fashion some way, somehow. Which is basically what digital sort of is. It's still ones and zeros. Is there any way to get around that? I don't know. Maybe we've peaked on that whole deal. Only time will tell, because it happened to Edison. And it happened to those guys in Japan that developed the compact disc. It's only a time before we figure out how much longer we can get what we're getting right now, right?
It's summertime, and Wizards has all your outdoor fun covered. Memphis' number one alternative smoke and vape shop is your CBD headquarters, but they're not just a CBD or smoke shop. Novelty t-shirts, hats, sunglasses, and more. New stuff in the store every day. Woodwick candles, silver jewelry, tapestries, and candles, and really cool backflow incense burners. Great deals throughout the store. $19.99 Madison Avenue, open 10 to 10, 7 days a week. Online at memphiswizards.com. Wizards, because it's still smoking. Must be 18 or older to buy smoking-related material.
Here's what's coming up on the next episode from Radioland with Rick Cheddar.
Now, we talked a little bit about the formats of radio and music, right? You know, we did that last week. This time, let's take a look at video. Let's think about this for a second. Because I'll tell you, there were so many changes over the years of where video has come from, and it was driven largely by one industry. One industry alone was involved in what decided who was going to win, VHS or Betamax. They were the ones that decided when Blu-ray was going to be a thing. Was it going to be DVD or Blu-ray? Yeah, that was. There was one, and I'm not talking mainstream Hollywood here either. This also decided at one point how television news operations were going to gather their stuff from the field and how they should make it. Yeah, there was a whole big deal about this. And it's still governed today because now with digital out there and digital video and all that fun stuff, you know what? The porn industry was right.
For previous episodes, go to radio-memphis.com. To download episodes to your mobile device, search the show in iTunes, player.fm, stitcher.com, Pocket Cast, or TuneIn. And now, here's more with Rick Cheddar from Radioland.
Right, you heard what's coming up next time on the program here from Radioland. I started at the top of the show talking, I said I was going to say something bad about a band. Here it is. The Who released a brand new record, a single called Ball and Chain. They've got a new CD coming out in November called Who, or The Two, as it were. And, I mean, the song is, it's okay. It's different, you know. It's the article that I, Consequence of Sound, had a big thing about it. And they were talking about how, you know, Pete still is, well, he's still an incredible songwriter. He's an interesting dude. I was fortunate to have an interview with him several years ago. And he's a fascinating cat and very talented man. And he said that, you know, Roger Daltrey's singing abilities has been revitalized now and he sounds a little bit better. And I don't know. I heard the song and I'm like, I don't know, fellas. I don't know. comments on this were pretty interesting because people were saying, like, well, the Stones are doing it. Why can't the Who? Okay, look, the Stones put a lot of effort into their stuff. Not that the Who didn't put any effort into what they were doing. Or Pete and Roger were not certainly putting any effort. I mean, of course they were. But it just, I don't know. There was a video out there. You can find it on YouTube. It's the Who soundcheck. And it later led me down to another thing where somebody had with their phone. They recorded a performance of Baba O'Reilly in Toronto on September 1st. There's enough clues right there to go find it on YouTube and watch it. And when you watch these guys play, I mean they're playing a Who show, of course. And you keep thinking, oh God, Roger's gonna fall off the front of that stage right into the pit. And Pete, I don't know. It's just, I don't know, it's kind of sad, I guess. They're in their mid-70s, I get that. But I hope that they're not doing it just to recapture their glory days. I would hate to think that this was sort of their midlife crisis, but I don't know, man. I've been a Who fan for many, many years. I love their early stuff. I really do. Who's Next is one of the greatest albums I think ever made. Quite frankly, it's just my opinion. There's so much to be said about what happened during that time and the music that came out. These are the guys at the top of their game. And here they are in 2019 trying to pull it off. And I don't know. They said this new collection of tunes has no sentimental value to it whatsoever. They're not trying to make a statement. They're just trying to make a record, I guess. I don't know. Your mileage may vary, but you know, to me, it seems like it, you know, for a lot of these bands, it's time to kind of hang it up, I guess. I don't know, if the Stones weren't around right now, I'd say, yeah, it's time. Look, Eddie Money died. God rest his soul. I was a man who lived the rock star life and made it to, what, 70, I think it was? 71? Esophageal cancer, which is awful in and of itself. But, you know, had a string of hits in the 80s and 70s and 80s. And he was the man. Former New York street cop, Eddie Mahoney. Edward Mahoney. Gonna have to write you a ticket, man. You know, ticket to paradise. It's hokey, I know. But that's the way it was in those days, you know. They're gonna rock until they drop. And if that's the case, you know, so be it. So I guess it leads me to our unpopular thought of this particular program. Classic rock ain't nearly classic no more. It's strictly oldies. I know it's unpopular perhaps, but that's kind of what it is. My neighbor was telling me that she was going with some friends to go see Lynyrd Skynyrd last night, and I haven't had a chance to do a postmortem with her about how that show went, but she really wasn't necessarily looking forward to it per se because, you know, it's Lynyrd Skynyrd. And I said, well, who's left in the band? I mean, really? I mean, no, look, I don't mean to get anybody in any trouble here, but I mean, it's Lynyrd Skynyrd, for God's sake. Half of them died in a plane crash. And the other half kind of went on for a while and did some things. Skynyrd! I don't know. I guess it's all the stereotypical stuff about them. But, you know, it's look, Steely Dan is probably one of my favorite bands in the entire world. Walter Becker dies, what, a couple of years ago? And Fagan says he's going to keep going as Steely Dan? I don't think you could do that. I think there should be some rule somewhere that says if more than half of your outfit dies, or half of your outfit dies, the Beatles, they lived up to it. You know, you got Paul and Ringo left. You know, John and George are gone. They're not traveling as... I know the band broke up long before that happened, but they could have got back together. I'm just saying, you know. Kiss, there's another one. They fired the Bunny Rabbit and the Space Guy. But no, they're still doing a thing. They've been saying goodbye for how many years now? How will we miss you if you won't go away? That's a whole. I could probably go on for another hour about this. I don't know, but I'm not going to do that to you people because I know you have your opinions, and whether they're whether I agree with them or not, or you agree with mine, it doesn't really matter as long as we don't stab each other over it. We're good there. And on that note, that's it. I'm done. I'm out of here. We'll see y'all next time. In the meantime, please take care of yourselves and take care of one another. For God's sake, people, stop shooting each other, okay? I'm Rick Cheddar, and this has been From Radioland.
Rick Cheddar from Radioland is produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. All music performed during this episode was used by permission. No part of this program can be rebroadcast or used in any other way except by written consent. For bookings and other inquiries, you can write the show by sending an email to radioland@pirateradiostudios.com. For more, go to radio-memphis.com.